This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Jane Brown.
While Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was on Broadway last night to attend a performance of the Canadian musical Come From Away, he had a conversation with former NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw about NAFTA and immigration. Trudeau cautioned that President Donald Trump's plan to tear up the North American Free Trade Agreement could hit U.S. jobs. Trudeau explained that his message to the new administration is that good jobs happen on both sides of the border because of the close relationship between the two neighbors. Is this, in fact, the case? And you're welcome to weigh in with your thoughts as well. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Joining us on Fight Back today is international business law expert Mark Warner. Mark, good to have you along today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'll put that question to you. Is what Trudeau is saying, is that in fact the case?
Oh, I think it is. I think that NAFTA has been useful to us in terms of growing the trading relationship and making the supply chains more efficient. That doesn't mean that everybody has benefited equally. Obviously, you know, when you do a trade agreement, there are some sectors that benefit more than others. But on balance, I think it's been positive, and I think that we would want to maintain it. Having said that, it's a 20-year-old agreement now, and it probably does need to be updated because whole sectors of the economy didn't exist back in 94. I don't think we were all surfing the information superhighway quite as much in 1994. So we need to reflect the changes in the development of the digital economy. So there are all sorts of areas where it can be updated and improved. Whether those would be characterized as tweaks or not is a different matter, but it's certainly something that needs to be improved.
And it wouldn't be unprecedented, at least according to the Prime Minister. He also told Tom Brokaw that NAFTA has been improved a dozen times over the past 20 years. So it is, I guess it is revisited. Maybe it just hasn't been revisited in as high profile a manner as what we've been hearing.
I'm not sure what he was talking about there specifically. I mean, it has been improved. I mean, it built right into NAFTA was the notion that you could request accelerated tariff reductions, and I have a feeling that's part of what he's talking about. Other than that, we did sort of amend it once by agreement of the parties on rules of origin and how they'd be calculated, and also in certain rules for how dispute settlements and investors for the chapter would work. So I wouldn't be thinking that it's as close to a dozen times unless you were being very generous, but I don't know what specifically he was looking at. But clearly it has been updated. But I think what we're looking at now would be more significant updates of a kind that we probably haven't done before.
Mark, let's have a conversation. And since you're an international business law expert, you can probably put things in layman's term. A quick course on NAFTA for dummies.
Okay.
What is it about NAFTA? How does it work between the two nations, effectively?
The three nations, so including Mexico.
Three nations,
so,
yes.
So basically what NAFTA is a basic trade agreement that deals with lowering the tariffs that are applied at the border for goods that are basically imported into Canada from Mexico or the U.S., and we agree to give them a preferential tariff rate. So that's the most basic thing, what a trade agreement does. And then in recognition of the fact that trade and investment are linked, round about the 1990s, the early 1990s, people began saying that we need to also liberalize trade in services like telecoms or, airplanes or whatever, banking. And even people who want to do work in, let's say, in digital media stuff, so people, professionals moving across the border. So we have a whole category of professionals, whether they're nurses or lawyers, who can cross the border and work. So services have been liberalized, and often when companies go across the border in terms of investment, well, they want to bring some of their managerial staff or key personnel. So we began to realize that if you really want to get all the benefits from liberalized trade, you've got to begin to open up trade, not just in goods, but also in services, and not just in goods and services, but also in investment. And that's what NAFTA does. And then after NAFTA, we negotiated another agreement multilaterally, the World Trade Organization, that reflects and in some ways goes beyond what we did in NAFTA in terms of services and other areas. But that's the basic structure of it. And the argument now is, does it need to be refreshed a little bit in terms of, as I said, adding some of these new sectors that didn't exist before? I mean, if you're somebody who works, let's say, in the industry of digital media studios and that sort of thing, you can kind of get across the border, kind of, sort of, by saying that you fall into one of the existing professional categories, but it's not that easy. So that's the kind of thing where I think from a Canadian point of view, we would want to be improving on. From the American point of view, they'd probably want to say, certainly Mr. Trump believes that the United States has lost some manufacturing jobs, and he, from what we can guess, wants to sort of improve on the rules of origin that are applied particularly in the auto space. And that basically means how much of the product has to be manufactured in one of the three NAFTA countries, Canada, the United States, or Mexico, to qualify for the preferential treatment.
We're having a conversation with international business law expert Mark Warner, and your questions of Mark are welcome. 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Our conversation today is prompted by comments that Justin Trudeau made last night while in New York and watching a Broadway performance of Come From Away to anchor Tom Brokaw, former NBC anchor Tom Brokaw, about NAFTA and immigration, saying that if Donald Trump tears up the North American Free Trade Agreement, it will hit U.S. jobs. It will affect the middle class. So, Mark, I understand you're not a strategist, but in terms of strategy, speaking to Tom Brokaw with his message, which certainly will get back to Donald Trump, was that a savvy thing to do? Because he's hitting Trump's key words of jobs and middle class.
I think it is, but I mean, I think he's walking a tightrope. And some of these things, I wonder whether they're not directed more at the domestic market here in Canada than they are in the United States. I think there's some advantage to saying these things in the United States. As someone who lived and worked in the United States, I do believe that at some point it's possible to cross the line. And I think if you look like, you use the word tweaking, if you look like you're tweaking him too much on immigration or some of these sensitive trade issues, my question is, at what point does he fight back? And presumably, if you've got his daughter sitting next to you, then he's not going to fight back on that particular moment. But he is an erratic, irascible character. And so I think it's generally positive. I think there will be limits to how wise it is to go right into the belly of the beast. Obviously, you want to lobby the governors, and you want to lobby the industries that are affected. But I wouldn't think you'd want to be taking him on too frontally in his own country. And if you're doing it in New York, you're in a pretty safe surrounding. I'm not sure about Houston, at some point, I think it's something that they've got to be careful in how they modulate that.
Well, certainly Prime Minister Trudeau has been very careful when it comes to talking about Trump's controversial immigration policies. In fact, part of that conversation last night with Tom Brokaw, Tom asked Prime Minister Trudeau about Canada's more relaxed immigration policy and whether it will pose a problem in the future.
Right.
What's going to be the impact of that long term, not just politically, but economically and culturally?
We'll agree to disagree on certain things, but I know, and I've always felt for Canada, that we recognize that diversity is a great source of strength, and that's something that we're open to in the world.
So if I'm an immigrant in the Middle East and know that I can't get into the United States, do I just turn my dial and say, I'm going to go to Ottawa?
Last year, we took in 40,000 refugees as well. But we have a rigorous process that does take years. And it's something that is important that we get right, because Canadians understand how important it is to bring in people who can be integrated and succeed. And that comes from the full diversity of the planet.
Yeah. So Mark, Trudeau has been very careful not to weigh in on Trump's policies, and yet, because in effect they don't directly relate to Canada's immigration policies, but when it comes to NAFTA, he is entering his comments and his cautioning and his warnings, so to speak. So he's being very careful. He's choosing his issues carefully.
I have to be honest with you. I don't know that I wouldn't say he's being very careful. I think that to go into another person's country, another leader's country, and to basically say, hey, this is what we do on immigration and we do it differently. I'm not sure. I just don't know how Trump will hear that. I think that in Canada, it clearly is being played as being very careful because we'd like to see him do more. Personally, I'm not sure how that wears or will wear in the United States as being very careful or not. And I think there's also at some point, there are 9 million people, apparently, I think, who are undocumented in the United States or some high number like that. You know, at what point does Mr. Trump say, okay, Mr. Trudeau, if you really do believe it, take them all, not 40,000. So it's kind of a smug Canadian thing that we're good at. I don't know. I think at some point, though, even the way he's doing it isn't going to wear all that well in the United States, even though I think it plays very well in Canada.
Well, and that brings up an interesting line of conversation, and perhaps you'd like to weigh in on that as well. 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Do you like the way Prime Minister Trudeau is so far diplomatically going into the United States and promoting Canada for our immigration policies and promoting NAFTA for what it brings to Canada as well as in the U.S. And, Mark, you know, there are some stats to back up his claims about NAFTA and how it would negatively affect the U.S. job market. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says the United States conducts more than $3.2 billion worth of trade with its North American neighbors every day. NAFTA brings export revenue worth $36,000 for each and every American factory worker. There was also a study published in January by the Center for Automotive Research suggesting the withdrawal from NAFTA or the implementation of punitive tariffs could result in the loss of 31,000 U.S. jobs. So clearly Trudeau knows of what he's speaking on some level.
Yeah, no, I think all of that's true. Now, I think the difficulty here is, to my ear, as somebody who spent the last 18 months, you know, saying in interviews and whatever in Canada that, look, don't overreact to what Trump saying. And then after we had the famous Oval Office visit, when Trump said we were going to tweak it, I seemed to do a whole batch of interviews where I was just advising people, don't think that the game is completely solved because he used the word tweak. I think we've got to find somewhere in the middle in Canada between apocalypse and complacency. And look, there's some things an American president can do with a trade agreement, and there's some things he can't do. When he talks about making minor changes and tweaks to the agreement, that's something he can do, a president can do, within his own sort of executive authority. Once you start doing broader changes, once you go to Congress for approval under what's called fast-track authority or trade promotion authority, then you get into all the demands from all the senators and congresspeople and all the bilateral irritants. And that's a process that an American president really can't control, even if he or she wanted to control it. So, yes, I don't think that the administration in the U.S. is talking so much about ripping up NAFTA anymore. But once it's notified, the president notifies Congress of his intent to renegotiate it, then you start getting into this process that really, by its nature, cannot be simply a matter of tweaking. And frankly, comments by the prime minister on Broadway will not change that.
All right, we'll take your calls now. Tony from Fort Erie, go ahead. What would you like to add today here on Zoomer Radio?
Oh, good afternoon. Okay, I was watching Fox News last night, and it was the Carlson Tucker show at 9 o'clock.
Yes.
And he was asking Mr. Trump about integration of Muslims into his own country, the same way we were doing it here in Canada. He said, what do you think, how it would work? And Mr. Trump said, I don't think so. That's what he exactly said. I don't think so.
So, in other words, he doesn't see Muslims coming from any nation being able to be integrated into the U.S.?
He said it was going to be very hard. He says, like usual, he always says, look at France. Look at Germany. Look at Belgium. He says, it's a mess. We don't want that here. And that was the end of it.
And that was it. Did Carlson push him any more on that? I did hear some clips this morning when I was going through my research for the morning news, but...
Well, he really wasn't pushing him too hard. I don't think he wanted to because, you know, the way Mr. Trump is, he's pretty, you know, a little bit on the nasty side. So it just went there, and he just, more or less, he was trying to say, forget about them coming in big numbers into the U.S. He says, look what's happening in Europe. And then he started about Sweden, and they said it was all fake news. Then the day after, they're burning up buildings and cars and everything else. So I don't know.
Well, I want to put this to Mark Warner, our international law expert on the line. And Tony, thank you for your call. What about the things that he's saying, the anti-Muslim rhetoric, at the same time as his ban is now being held, the revised ban is being held, did not go to into effect at midnight as it was supposed to do?
Well, I think, you know, this is a tough one for him. I mean, he obviously campaigned and won on the anti-immigrant sentiment, and he's tried to bring in both of those executive orders, and I don't think he's going to change his mind on that. What's great about the American system, from my point of view, is that they've got this great system of checks and balances, right? You've got, the judiciary can stand up, as we're seeing now, and challenge him. You've got the various companies, corporate leaders are standing up in terms of particularly in the high-tech area that are affected by some of these immigration bans. So I think for the next 4 years, we're going to see a lot of people fighting back and resisting in different ways, and with any luck, the system will work. Having said that, wearing my American lawyer hat, because I'm both, I would caution people from reading too much into a district court decision from Hawaii. My fear is that once this goes up the chain to the American Supreme Court, as it ultimately will, that Trump will have the stronger hand in the arguments there for some technical legal reasons. And may be a danger in declaring premature victory on some of these things.
Oh, and we've used the word tweak a lot so far in the show. Has he tweaked the ban enough that it meets legal requirements?
Well, here's what it comes down to. An American president, traditionally in American law, is seen to have a wide discretion in foreign affairs. In fact, what's interesting, Jane, is that if you take a look at the cases that I would look at to figure out how much a president can do in the trade law area, those cases that are referred to there are almost identical to the cases that are referred to in the immigration area. They sort of they cross-refer to each other. So that generally speaking, in the foreign affairs area, an American president is seen to have very wide power, some of it delegated, further delegated by the American Congress. The question of tweaking on the immigration stuff, it really, if it's just strictly a question of what's in the president's power, he would win hands down. And I don't even think it would be close, just basically on the law. What this judge in Hawaii has done is said, look, based on your rhetoric in the campaign, we're going to use that and infer from that you as a president didn't have a valid purpose. You had an unconstitutional purpose, a discriminatory purpose that violated the protection on freedom of religion. Now, that is a case that has never gone to the Supreme Court before, and I believe no court has interpreted in the United States. That's going to bring two conflicting values. Can you, in the middle of a campaign, take the hurly-burly of a campaign and use that rhetoric to infer something about the president's discretion? And if you do that, are you going to bring the courts into basically questioning all of the foreign policy decisions of a president? My guess on that, and different legal scholars will debate it, is that that's a hard argument for the president to lose on.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Jane Brown.
Prime Minister Trudeau was in New York last night for the opening of the musical Come From Away on Broadway. While at the theater, he was interviewed by journalist Tom Brokaw about NAFTA and immigration. And he cautioned Donald Trump, the U.S. president, of tearing up NAFTA, saying the document could be tweaked but not torn up, because if it were to be torn up, it would cost thousands and thousands of U.S. middle class jobs. We're taking your calls here for international business law expert Mark Warner. Let's go to Al in Brantford. You have a question or comment, Al?
Yes. I would want to know if he's got any numbers in his head right there regarding how many Asian companies have came into Mexico, built plants, and used that part of NAFTA with Mexico to backdoor into the United States and Canada.
Hmm.
I do know one line that left Oshawa, the car line from GM. They took it from Oshawa to Mexico. The cars were being built down there for a daily wage of what it costs GM for 1 hour's, or pardon me, 1 hour's labor in Oshawa. They were paying for 1 day's labor in Mexico, but the cars were coming back to both U.S. and Canada with no reduction in the price.
Okay, great
question. Can you explain that?
Great question. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so I think if you take a look at what we have in the world in the auto industry specifically, there are three basically auto-producing parts of the world. There's sort of Europe based around Germany, if you like, largely, and you've got Asia based around Japan and Korea, and then you've got NAFTA with Canada, U.S., and Mexico. And if you take a look, there's a really good work that's come out of a think tank in Washington called the Peterson Institute. If you take a look at that, you'll see that each one of those regions has a sort of low-wage jurisdiction attached to it to produce some of the products, because it's just the way it is. Some of the things that go into making a car are, you know, you need to produce very cheaply. And that's not – Mexico fulfills that function with NAFTA. Some of those other countries in Southeast Asia fulfill that function within the Asian auto market. And Eastern Europe, or what we, I guess what we now call Central Europe, fulfills that function, as well as some of Southern Europe in the European market. So I think that it's fair to say that has affected some of the production. But what you need to look at it too is the overall rise of investment. You know, if you look at Canada, for instance, just to stay with Canada, the days when the Detroit 3 were the major part of production of autos, maybe that's about 20 years out of date now. Now we have the tremendous production or here in Canada from Korea and Japanese manufacturers. So they've actually invested in Canada in part because they want to take advantage of those NAFTA rules of origin and assemble the cars and then export into the United States. So when you do these kind of calculations, you've got to look both ways in terms of the overall more efficiency of the North American supply chains, so let's call it the Detroit 3, and as well the increased investment in trade that's come from the Asian manufacturers who have set up in Ontario and in Mexico also to export into the United States. So it's a net positive, but as I said earlier, not everybody benefits equally in every single market. The theory of trade is maybe it works best for us in another market because we're selling more oil or we're selling more higher-end auto, higher-end manufacturing, advanced manufacturing products, or maybe it's more agriculture, or maybe it's the high-tech skilled digital media people from Canada who are trained at Ryerson and they want to go work in Hollywood. And so you've got to look at the whole. You really can't pull apart one sector, I think, when you look at trade.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today, Mark. We were all schooled a little bit more than we were a half hour ago on NAFTA, that's for sure.
Thanks for having me.
International business law expert Mark Warner.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.